Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And today our guest is someone, if you don't know her name, you should know her name. She's really like the queen of showbiz. It's Jamie DeRoy. She's known first as an entertainer and then as a Broadway and off-Broadway producer. Jamie has appeared on stage with Joan Rivers, Norm Crosby, and has headlined at many of New York's major clubs. She has 9 CDs, and she's a 7-time Tony Award-winning Broadway producer. Her credits include The Ferryman, Angels in America, The Band Visit, The Play That Goes Wrong, 1984, A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, Fiddler on the Roof, The Heidi Chronicles, Catch Me If You Can, The Addams Family, Blythe Spirit, Miracle Worker, The Seagull, and many, many more. And the off-Broadway list is even longer. So it's really impressive. And thank you, Jamie, so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And I'm going to ask right off the bat, comedy, dramas, musicals. So what's your formula to picking a successful show? How do you know?
Well, I mean, I don't think there is any formula, and I think you never know. You just never know. Because there are no formulas, and there's like no rules in this business. So I go with things that I like.
So you let's go to a reading
one way or another.
So you get a printed piece of a script and you read that, or you go to a reading, or you how is it pitched to you that you say, you know what, this has the potential of being a really good show? What's the environment? How does it work? Is it kind of explain
well,
that to me? Even.
I would say that every single instance is totally different. And you know, Angels in America, I certainly knew the play from various productions way before. I did not see the Bryan Cranston, no, I shouldn't say that, I'm sorry, I take that back. I did see the Bryan Cranston, no, that Bryan Cranston was Network. I saw that in London, but I didn't get to see Angels in America in London. And but, you know, I knew the play. I knew it very well, and I knew it was going to be, you know, something I'd want to be involved with for various reasons, mostly for all the people that I lost over the years to AIDS. And then, of course, that was a similar reason for the Inheritance.
Mm-hmm. Which I just saw, by the way. It was wonderful.
Oh, my God. It's just so moving. It's just unbelievable. Especially part one. I don't think I've ever been so moved by a play in my life other than Corum Boy years ago, which moved me but didn't seem to move the New York critics. They moved the London critics, but not New York critics.
And Steve, thought the opposite, right? You thought the second
I thought the second. I mean, I loved the part one. I thought the ending of part one was amazing. But I thought part two was kind of old. I guess I don't know what my expectations were for part two, but I was so enthralled with the story that kind of kicked in part two that I thought that was really so captivating. So that was my take on it. I mean, I love
both parts. I like both parts. I mean, you know, everybody has their own favorite, I guess. But I certainly loved both parts. And I think, you know, I don't want to give away any of the story, but it's, you know, when it all comes to completion, it's very powerful.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way too. Not that it gives anything away either, but it's a little, you know, there's things about 6 Feet Under, the HBO show. I felt something in there that just really touched me. It was really well done.
Yeah.
Very well done.
So, Jamie, have you ever been surprised and disappointed, or do you usually call the shots about what's going to make it and what's just going to do okay?
Oh, no. I mean, I have been often surprised and disappointed. Catch Me If You Can. I mean, we got nominated for a Tony, but just the reaction, one of the critics, and then two of the response to the audience, not even response, but let's say the ticket sales.
Mm-hmm.
It was disappointing because it was a really good show. And I mean, in my opinion, but unfortunately, it's like sometimes, if you don't get the review you quite hoped for, it hurts you at the box office.
Right.
And you never want that. You always hope for a great review, and then you know, take it from there. You know, I mean, it's kind of like you just don't know. Quorum Boy had good reviews in London, and I really thought that everyone would be just like blown away with it. And they had a chorus of 30 people singing the Hallelujah chorus. It was just gorgeous. But for whatever their reasons, they did not take to it, and it lost everything.
What about the reverse, where you thought like, I don't really know if this is gonna it's gonna have legs, and then all of a sudden it takes off? What do you have any examples of that?
Well, the play that goes wrong. I mean, I thought it would be funny. Whether who knows how Americans would take to it, because it did. Again, it's another one that came from London, and it had a really lovely run on Broadway. And then moved to off-Broadway. Now it's on the road. I mean, it's just doing really, really well.
That was a surprise.
I don't know if it's exactly... I mean, I didn't go into it thinking I was going to lose money, but I would say that it surprised me that it did as well. And I mean, I thought To Kill a Mockingbird would do well, but did I think it was going to get, extended and a cast replacement and then a 2-year tour? After it closes on Broadway, and then, a UK production, I didn't even think about anything beyond its run on Broadway.
So, Jamie, do you think all producers like you have the same reaction, or do you think that some producers, say, I know the formula for this, I know what does well? I mean, it seems like it's a crapshoot.
Well, it's somewhat of a crapshoot. I mean, look, there's some things that you can kind of factor into and kind of figure, but again, there's just no sure thing. There's no sure thing because you have a star in the play. There's no sure thing because it's a certain kind of a musical. Because I mean, I'm in Tina Turner, and I'm in Ain't Too Proud, which is the Temptations musical.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they're doing, both of them doing extremely well. But then why didn't the Cher show do well? You know what I mean? Why didn't the Donna Summer show do well? They're not the same show. Maybe it was the book, or maybe, who knows what it was, but it didn't take off like I'm sure that the producers and the investors, had thought or hoped.
Jamie, at this point, you really can't call it. I'm really glad you mentioned those shows. There's nothing, that tickles you one way or another to say, no surprise, it didn't do so well.
I mean, I guess, look, there's some things that I've gotten involved with like Thurgood. We were kind of told that it would probably, if we were lucky, we'd get 50% of our money back. But that we wanted to do it because it was a story about Thurgood Marshall and starring Lawrence Fishburne that had to be told. We ended up getting 60% of our money back, and it ended up as an HBO special, and it hasn't gone on the road. We were hoping that Lawrence Fishburne would take it to London. He wanted to, but then he got NCIS, so that didn't happen at the time. But I didn't go to investors for that, because that was the first time in my career that I was actually told up front, if we're lucky, we'll get half our money back. So I couldn't go to somebody kind of knowing that.
Right.
You know
what I mean? So I did it all myself, and we we didn't get all our money back. We just got a little more than we expected. So yes, it did better than I expected, but it didn't turn into like a real profitable show, but I never regretted it for a second. I guess the one thing that everybody thought would be this huge hit, and especially of recent history, was Be More Chill, because it had all these, you know, millions of downloads from these kids when they did it off Broadway. They would do these.
I saw it off Broadway, and the audience was like millennials and younger, but some of them had seen it 5 and 6 times. It was crazy.
I know, and so everybody was just dying to get into this production. My share went so fast that for my own investment and another investor's investment, I had to go to another producer to take it. And then it ended up, you know, not doing well. It's now going to London and then on the road. And maybe there in the smaller venues and in smaller weekly break even, you know, maybe there it'll do better. But, you know, the Broadway version did not do well, even though, you know, people liked it and the kids still liked it, but they're not the ones that really, you know, have all the money to spend to buy the
tickets. That's okay. Don't you think the ticket prices on Broadway are so, it really stops anyone who's younger, for sure, and a lot of us who are older, it stops us from getting as many shows as we want because the prices are so high. I mean, I think that's why it did Be More Chill did better on off Broadway, because the ticket prices were pretty affordable. That's when I saw it, and when it came to Broadway, they were more than double.
Right.
Well, what do you think about that, Jamie? About the ticket price?
Well, of course it does affect the audience, and especially when you're going for, you know, a younger audience. There are a lot of ways of getting around that, but it has to be on a show that is not selling out, because there's things like what they call, there's theater extras, there's audience extras, there's play-by-play, TDF, you can join Theater Development Fund, you can join for $30 a year and see shows. They offer an awful lot of shows, including a lot of, you know, big hit shows, but they'll be, you know, up in the balcony, but the seats are affordable. And listen, when I was young, I saw everything from the balcony.
Right.
I think the first time I ever really paid for a full price orchestra seat when I was younger was for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, because I was really wanting to see Uta Hagen up close. But in most cases, I would be, you know, going for the balcony seats because, or standing room only, because that's
right.
What I could afford. And there's all these Broadway box. There's a lot of discount sites and whatnot around that you can, you know, get cheaper tickets. It doesn't help the show itself as much, but it certainly helps the person trying to see the show. And then you've got the tickets booth on 47th Street, where you can get at the half price ticket booth, you know, which is run by TDF. And those are usually just the day of, although we did find that there's another tickets booth at the Lincoln Center area that
right.
Sometimes you can go the day before to get the next day matinee on Broadway, or maybe even evening. I don't know, but we found it for somebody who was looking for a matinee performance.
But does it concern you that so much of Broadway is becoming these, these retreads of things like it's all these musical groups? It started with Jersey Boys, and then it became Carole King, and then Temptations. There's that whole thing, and then there's a bunch of movies that are now turning into, you know, Mean Girls and whatnot. But there doesn't seem to be this kind of a weird. You know, there isn't as much original material on Broadway as there had been in the past. Does that worry you at all? Is that the direction we're going, or what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I don't know if it worries me. You know, some of these things work really well. I mean, when you see the Temptations, it's all their songs, but it works really well within the context of the story. And the same with the Tina Turner musical. I happen to have loved Jersey Boys. I thought, you know, I loved the songs and I loved the story. I thought the story was brilliantly told. You know, is Rick Ellis and Marshall Brishman did an incredible job. I mean, there's always going to be these jukebox shows, but not all of them are going to always necessarily work.
Right. And the movies that have been turned back into musicals like Mean Girls and others that are on there, is that something that's just going to be around from now on forever?
It doesn't seem like it's going away. And, you know, Mean Girls is still going. It's it hasn't broken even yet. I'm sure it will. But I would have thought that it would have by now, you know, done that. But it's, you know, it's really fun. And there's so many of them out there. Beetlejuice had a slow start, then it turned around. And now, because another musical is hovering for the theater, you know, we're being asked to vacate that theater. Whether we can move to another theater still remains to be seen. I hope we can, but it's expensive to move a show. So it's not, it's, you know, as they say, easier said than done. But
the woman who sat next to me when I saw Come From Away said she'd seen Beetlejuice 3 times. She took each of her kids separately to see Beetlejuice. She loved it so much. So.
Oh, how fun. Well, I'm involved in a group called Inside Broadway, and what they do is they take school kids to show them kind of the inner workings of how a Broadway show works. So they had the sound people come out and show you different things, the props and the guys that built the sets, and they would move sets, they would do different things with sound and lights, and they had a couple of performances, and Alex Brightman, who's the star of Beetlejuice, usually it's the understudy that's there, he came and performed, and he was just as charming as could be. And, you know, these are school kids. I don't think that they would know the difference if it was him or somebody else, you know. But I thought it was so wonderful of him to do it. And it's a very heartwarming experience, being an adult sitting in that audience among all these young kids and having their early experience to a Broadway show. Now, it's this group started because they went to the same theater, the Winter Garden, and saw Cats. And then those days, they were just given like 50 tickets in the balcony to bring school kids. And Cameron McIntosh just, you know, kept this up, and they just kept bringing kids back and back and back, different schools, etc. It's morphed into, because there's a lot of other organizations that take kids to the theater, like Wendy Wasserstein's group, you know, Open Doors. So now it's morphed into this thing about, you know, how does it work? And it's just fascinating. And I think the kids really love it, because even as a co-producer, I've been in that audience a couple times and said, wow, I didn't realize that's how that puppet worked, because they're never going to show you that on stage.
Right.
But they got to show the kids, or like in Nice Work If You Can Get It, when they come out of the bathtub and they raise the bathtub up, and you saw the ladders coming up all around the bathtub so the girls could climb up the ladders from below the stage to do that. I mean, it was really fascinating.
I wish they would do that for senior citizens as well.
When I was in junior high school, we had a backstage tour of the theater. We did Radio City, which is amazing, and we also did the theater that was playing the show Sugar, which was Some Like It Hot, but the musical version of it. And in that movie, the train moves across the stage, and I remember the wings were only about 7 or 8 feet, and the train folded up as it went off stage, and that's how they made it seem like this monster train kept going back and forth on the thing, and there were no wings for it at all. So it was amazing, and it's been 1,000 years since I was in junior high school, and I still remember it. So that is a great experience for kids to see how the magic is done. Is incredible.
So I want to ask Jamie. Jamie, when you were growing up in Pittsburgh, did you ever expect to be this big, you know, Broadway producer and involved in the entertainment world? I mean, how did all that start?
Well, when I was growing up in Pittsburgh, I never thought about the other side of, you know, in producing at all. I wanted to be on the stage. And my father, when I was young, was asked by a friend of his to put $1,000 into Hal Prince's first show, which was Pajama Game. And he did it, and they did very well with it. And then a year later, it was his second show, Damn Yankees, both of them directed by George Abbott. And, you know, he did quite well in those shows. And then somebody else asked him to invest in a play that only ran 3 days. So my mother was more of the influencer of, you know, let's not do this again. And, you know, really not realizing, okay, so one play didn't make it, but these two musicals are going on. And, you know, she just was seeing the short life of it all. But because of those two musical investments, Pajama Game and Damn Yankees, I did get to go to New York, not to opening night, but I was taken at another time where I got to be taken backstage and meet the cast. And it was very, you know, very exciting. And I always wanted to do it anyway, but that was like the cement, you know. There was no going back.
Right. So how many years ago did you start investing in Broadway?
Well, the first show that I got involved with, I mean, one show that I guess was Say Goodnight, Gracie. I don't know. I think that was even after my first show that I co-produced, which was that the complete works of William Shakespeare, Abridged, which I guess we started raising money in 95. It opened early. We raised money in 94. It opened early 95, and it played at the West Side Theater downstairs. And it was Jeffrey Richards' first outing as a co-producer, and there were only three of us on board. It was Jeffrey, his friend Richard Gross, and me. I lived in the building. And when he called me and asked, he sent me one night, he brought it over from London for a one-night stand at Alice Tully Hall, and he sent me to see it, and I just laughed my head off. So I wasn't sure why I was being sent to see it, but, you know, when I got the call, how'd you like it? You know, I was like, I loved it. It's so funny, so clever, and what a fun way to revisit or visit any of these Shakespearean shows. And it certainly calls it down to, you know, the bare minimum. And so he said, well, how would you like to be a producer? And I said, huh? What does that entail, you know? And he said, you'd have to raise money. And I was like, but Jeffrey, I've never raised money for anything. And my husband at the time had said to me, well, why don't you at least try? You know, why say no before you even have given it a fair shot? So I said, okay. And I, you know, I tried and I did it. And toward the end, he called me and he said, whatever you have, just stop. We're going to still, you know, you'll still get your full credit. But we want to take the rest of it because we think this is going to be such a hit.
And so,
I mean, I was just a little bit shy of what I was supposed to bring in. So I, you know, I could just sort of stop going after my friends at that point. And, you know, we got money from that first production for like 20 years. It didn't totally pay back off Broadway, but after a couple years, we broke even, and then everything after that was profit, and it was from licensed productions. We never did a tour. It was only a three-character play. Mm. And, you know, they were three men, so you only had to have like two understudies. And everybody wanted to do it because it was fun, it was fast, and you know, 20 years we'd get checks. I have one person that thought that was the best not Broadway because it was an off-Broadway, but the best theater investment he ever made.
That's amazing. Jamie, how do you find your investors? I mean, is it your group network that you already know, or are you always bringing on new people?
They keep, it's the ever-changing list. And when I started, I, went to family and friends. And, after that, it was, some of the same people, some not. Then you meet new friends. Sometimes people, ask you, or somebody has a friend that wants to do something. But, I'm just constantly, meeting new people. And sometimes the people that, end up investing with me are not the people that you would sort of say, oh, well, I could have told you that he'd be, a great investor. Because it doesn't mean that because somebody has a lot of money that that's how they want to spend it.
Right.
You know.
So you're constantly on the prowl for investors.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, I'm not obnoxious about it of everywhere I go pitching someone. God, I forget where I was the other day, which somebody was, pitching their show, and it was, it was just at a business Christmas party. But I thought, this is not the place to be pitching your show. I mean, everybody here is in the business. Nobody wants to hear about your show that's been, kicking around for, God only knows how many years. I think there's a place for everything, a time and place.
And if you pitch someone and they invest and then the show loses money, does that hurt your relationship with them? I mean, I would think that
would
be a problem.
Well, every person reacts differently, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I had a very, very big investor that wanted to do a lot of money in one show that didn't make it. I, at the time, had said to him, we could amortize your expense and you could not just do this one, but I could put you in two or three other, not
right.
Like one or two other shows, let's say, meaning a combination of like two shows or three shows. And one of the shows I offered him was Book of Mormon. And he said, no, I want it all in this. And then after that, I guess, because I don't know why he wanted it all in that, but he just believed in it. And I'm sorry that, he didn't let me put some of it in Book of Mormon, because he would have, done really well. Really well. I mean, I think, Book of Mormon, other than like Hamilton, is, one of the more successful shows. And Mamma Mia, I'm sure, is very successful. And, I wasn't in it, so I can't speak to what kind of percentage, but it ran for 15 years. So it had to be very, a big one.
And do you think that, like, if you have this pool of people that you can go to that you are friends with or whatever, if they don't make money, does the pool shrink, or people keep coming back for more, even though they've lost money on a show, they're still willing to risk it again? Or what's the dynamic like?
It always changes. I mean, I ran into someone that, she wasn't investing with me, but she was investing with someone I knew. And I had just asked her if she was doing this one particular show this year, and she said no more. So I don't know. Maybe her track record with this person wasn't so great, and they just gave up. But, some people will give up. Some people will just, keep doing it because they enjoy it. I mean, I have one investor that just feels like, it's great if he makes money, but if he doesn't make money, he's still supporting the art form, and it's not that much different than writing a check to support a theater group,
Right.
He wants to be involved, right.
Yeah, and he wants to be supportive. But not everybody feels that way.
Right. So when you walk into a room, do you feel that people are looking at you like, oh, here she comes, she wants my money? Or when you walk into a room, do people say, oh, my God, here comes the genius of Broadway?
Well, I don't consider myself the genius of Broadway. But
well, I know a lot of people feel that way about you.
But I also don't feel that I walk in a room and people are afraid to see me because I'm going to, hound them about stuff. Because I never hound anybody. It's almost more of, if somebody asks what you're working on and you say something and they go, oh my God, would I love a piece of that? mm-hmm. you know, would you send
right.
the information on that? I was at my building's Christmas party the other day, and, you know, a few people were asking me about stuff, people that had not, you know, somebody was new and somebody I'd known for years that never said anything about having any interest, and I never, you know, approached them for having, you know, for doing anything. But you know, two people said, I'd really like to speak to you about this. And, you know, one of them was like, seemed to be interested for himself. And the other one seemed to be interested for a friend of hers. So, you know, that's just the introduction. That doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Right.
A lot can happen between the interest and the time that it takes to, you know, get the papers and the check. I mean, I know one year that somebody wanted the Addams Family, and I had many meetings, and, you know, I kept waiting and waiting for the check, and now it was like the due date, and it wasn't until the day the money was due that he said, well, I talked to my wife, and she doesn't want me to do this. And I was like, it's not that I minded that he wasn't going to do it. I just minded that he waited on the
right.
day it was due to tell me, because it really, that puts me in a horrible position of how, you know, of having no time to basically replace him.
Right.
Jamie, there was one other thing I always wanted to ask you, since I know you. When you are putting money into a show, and I think the audience that's going to listen to this is going to want to know this too, and you go to rehearsals and see things beforehand, and if you do, do you ever say, oh my God, you know, you have to make it more funny, or you have to make it more musical, or you have to be more serious? How involved does a producer get in the production?
There's so many producers these days that you're not invited to the rehearsals. You'll be lucky if you get invited to what they call the invited dress rehearsal, which is the night before the first preview. And on occasion, the invited dress rehearsal is never a guaranteed thing that it'll even happen, because on occasion, a director will say, we don't want anyone in the audience for our dress rehearsal. We're not ready. Of course, they have to be pretty ready the next night because it's a paying audience.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But it does happen. And so they would rather that the people just came with a paying audience and not with this invited audience, and because they're afraid that, you know, people won't understand the dynamics, that things could go wrong, or people still maybe are, you know, having trouble with their lines, or, you know, whatever the reasons are. But for the most part, no, you can't go to rehearsal.
So you're not really influencing the production.
No, that you have to be one of the lead producers to be that inside. Now, you're allowed before it opens and after it opens, all those things, to be invited to marketing and ad meetings, stuff like that, and you can put your 2 cents in for that. But they never really allow you to come to a rehearsal. Now, I'm a co-producer or an associate producer, you know, sometimes they're the same thing, on something at Primary Stages. But that's a smaller situation, and there's not a lot of producers on it. I mean, I'm on board, and somebody just called me the other day who's a friend of mine, and he also produces. And he said, I just wanted to let you know that they spoke to me and I've decided to join you on Charles Bush's new play, The Confessions of Lily Dare. And I was like, that's great. So, you know, I'm sure if Ted Snowden and I wanted to go sit in on a rehearsal that we could do so.
Right.
But if any other thing that I'm involved in, there, if I asked, I would get a definitive no.
So a lot of this is really for the investment and not to be a part of the entertainment world. Because a lot of people tell me they invest in Broadway because they get to mingle and elbow.
Yeah, but that's on, you know, either the invited dress, and sometimes they'll have a party after the first preview, or, you know, certainly the opening night and the party following it, and then you get to mingle with the cast and whatnot. That's when you're going to get to mingle. It's not during rehearsals. They are working their asses off, and they don't want outsiders. And, you know, and a lot of people that are co-producers or investors, you know, they might have the money to write a check or raise the ability to raise money, but that doesn't qualify them to say, yeah, this is what's wrong with your show. And that becomes too many cooks. I mean, that I think that would be a mistake anyway.
I agree.
All right, but I have to ask you, Jamie, you've been around and you're so seasoned, and there's very few people that are as accomplished as you are. There has to be times where you thought to yourself, oh, my God, I could have told them that that wasn't going to work. Oh, my God, it was my money. Why didn't I have a say in this?
Well, sometimes, you know from like a read-through or just reading a script, and you can say, you know, and this was even as a co-producer, and I said to one of the lead producers, I said, this isn't gonna work in the script. But I'm just giving him my two cents. That doesn't mean that they listened, you know.
Right.
In that case, it didn't work, and it backfired. But you know, I have very little influence, even though I might have been right. You know.
Right.
Jamie, what are you pitching right now? How many shows right now, and what are they that you're now looking for money for?
Well, I mean, I only have like one unit of company left, and I've got, you know, about three or four people hovering over it. And I'm working on Hangmen, which I just started, and money isn't due until next month. And that was a Martin McDonagh play that played it in London, but then came to New York and played at the Atlantic, and was very successful. But it was about a year and a half ago, and now it has a different cast. So those are the only two things at the moment that I'm, you know, raising money for, and I'll be done with company by next week, if you know.
And company, obviously, I'm guessing, was easy to get money for because everybody knows it's kind of a proven hit. So money just poured in for that, where something like Inheritance, which is sort of a, you know, niche kind of play, might have been much harder.
Because it's long and two, you know, two parts and whatever, and it's expensive. But it's nothing's ever easy, and I came on to company late, so, you know, it's not, sometimes when you come in late, it's not so easy because a lot of the people that you would have normally gone to have already either said yes or no, whether, you know, they wanted to do it or they didn't want to do it, but they've already been approached.
It went fairly easily
because, as I said, I only have a unit.
Who's the star? Is the star, is there a big name attached to company? I don't know.
Well, Patti LuPone and Katrina Lenk.
Two huge names. So that must make it easier also, right? Or not?
Yeah, and people know what company is, and they love the score. Yeah. And, you know, it's the revamped version. It's the, you know, the sexes are different. The gender, you know, the whole thing has been changed, and it did play in London and won an Olivier. So from that standpoint, you know, it's a little easier. Probably the two easiest things that I raised money for, you know, at least of late, were the Tina Turner musical and the Temptations musical, Ain't Too Proud.
Oh.
Because Tina Turner coming from London with, you know, great accolades, and Ain't Too Proud came out of California and Berkeley Rep. I got to, you know, go out to see it, and it just, because of the music and, you know, everybody knows those songs, that was easy. So those two were like the easiest. But, you know, shows that maybe weren't so easy to raise money for, still end up doing well. You know, a lot of people told me I was crazy to get involved with Gentleman's Guide or The Band's Visit or Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. All three of them won Tonys.
Right. Yeah, no, I know. I can't even, like, I hear about a show coming and I never know what to, you know, you never know if it's going to click or not click. Sometimes it's it's almost always a surprise for me. So I can't even imagine what it's like for you having money involved in the play.
Jamie, do you go after a show or play, or do they know to come to you? I mean, how does that network work?
I think it works in both directions.
Really?
Yeah.
So you make yourself available and people, you know, at the beginning, and then people just knew that you were working the system, so they came knocking at your door, or you went knocking at their door saying, I want to participate.
You know, today I had a meeting with Daryl Roth and one of my investors about a new off-Broadway show that she's doing. And she sent me a script, which I read. She sent me some recorded, you know, some songs that they recorded that I listened to. And, you know, we went over and spoke to her about the project. And, you know, I got a little more of an understanding of it, because it's not, when you just read a script, it's a little harder. The one script that I read that I just laughed out loud was Stephen Aldi Gerges' play, The Motherfucker with a Hat. I mean, that made me laugh out loud.
Mm-hmm.
But certain plays I, you know, didn't see, and there's no way to see them anymore. It's a lot easier when, like, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, I got to see that at Lincoln Center before it moved. Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, I got to go to, like, a second or third preview, and even send some people to see it so that they, you know, could see what they were getting into. But you don't always have that opportunity, because in most cases they want all the money before, way before, like when they're starting rehearsals, they usually want it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it could work in two directions. You could wait, let somebody wait until a preview and they're going to flip for it, or you send them to a preview and they're going to go like, oh my God, this is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So most people prefer to have the money up front,
right,
as opposed to later.
So
you
Jamie,
asked
how,
me
how
something
do you
about
think?
Readings and stuff. I do go to readings, and sometimes you can tell from a reading, you know, whether you like it or not, and sometimes it's still hard to tell. I mean, being at Daryl's office today, she was the lead producer on Kinky Boots. I went to a reading, and you know, it didn't speak to me. I was afraid of it. I didn't do it. It's a hugely successful show, hugely. And
right,
been all over the world and, you know, played, I don't know, 6 years in New York, whatever, but mostly all over the world. And
so what did you say to yourself after that?
Well, I mean, I don't exactly kick myself, but I, you know, I guess, you know, I read it wrong. You know, sometimes you just read things wrong, or you listen to some people that are also at the reading and they give their, you know, their opinion, and you think, oh, maybe they know more than I do, and nobody knows anything more than the next person. Because there's even the biggest producers end up with some shows that just don't make it.
So, Jamie, we are way, way over time, but this has
absolutely
been justly, I mean, this has been a course that people should listen to, like masterclass on your iPhone, because this
Lois,
so, yes.
We left that one important question.
Okay.
Jamie, can you get us cheap Broadway tickets? That's really what the question I need to ask. And
I can get you house seats for cheap Broadway tickets. You have to do that on your own. But let me
I'll just say one thing
differentiates the lead producers from the co-producers.
Yes.
Because I'm sure it's a sore point with most lead producers. And that is that the lead producers are the ones that really have all the creative input, that really make it all happen. By the time they come to me, this is happening. I'm not finding the people to write the score or to direct the piece or casting it. I mean, in a replacement situation, I've been in situations where I've recommended somebody and maybe they'll get it. But, you know, I'm not in that creative force. And the lead producers, and it also makes a difference in the money. Now, they're responsible for the overall bringing all of the money in overall. a co-producer, somebody comes to me and says, you bring in a finite amount of money, and for this, we're going to give you some points, or in some instances, you don't get points and you just get a credit. But if you're above the title, it makes you Tony eligible. So, and if you're below the title, which I was on the first show that I got involved with, and it won a Tony, and I did not, and I learned the hard way about being above the title. But you know, we would get a portion of the profits. Like, you know, you might hear people saying, "Oh, I got a 1 for 5, or a 1 for 4, or a 1 for 6," and it means that once it goes into profit, it's 50-50 split, investors to producers. So as a co-producer, whatever my deal is, let's say it's a 1 for 4. For every $4 that producer collects, I get $1 out of it. And that's the only perk I get. I don't make any money unless it goes into profit. But I don't have the same influence over production that a lead producer does.
But you have been a lead producer.
Well, I have been, but not for a while. And I don't think of myself in that way. Mm-hmm. But
so, Jamie, to wrap this up, we want to ask you, how well do you think Broadway is going to do in 2020, and what's the future? I mean, is it always going to be the most exciting, you know, show place on earth, or, you know, is the audience changing, or, you know, is this a good place? You know,
I think the audience is constantly changing, but... And they're always ready to bury Broadway. Wendy Wasserstein made a comment about that years ago. But I think Broadway's pretty healthy. And
compared to when I was a kid, it seems a lot healthier. I mean, I watched it. It was always on the verge of going onto the critical list and death, and now it seems very vibrant. There's so many shows out there, and you see lines of people and a lot of young people in the theater. So. I certainly feel encouraged, so that part's good. Lois, are we ready to wrap?
Oh, this is a wrap. This has been absolutely wonderful, and Jamie
wonderful.
Is just
Jamie,
the best.
Thank you.
Jamie,
thank you so
great to talk to you both.
Thank you very much, and once again, I'm Steve Greenberg with...
Lois Whitman-Hess.
And we have been Lying on the Beach. Thank you.